The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Yes. Coming to your cordless, everybody. It's 11:02 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States, 8:02 p.m. on the West Coast, 2:02 p.m. in the afternoon in Sydney, Australia, and 2 minutes after 10 p.m. right here in Ilhan Omar's district in Northeast Minneapolis. I'm Jim Tucci Peters. I'm Jim Peters. this is Jim Peters tonight. Okay, so... I just lost my train of thought there, but we're going to plow forward. That's what we're going to do. So, so what was I going to tell you? Let me tell you, this one I'm going to tell you right away. First of all, I want a little apologies. We had a fantastic last Wednesday. We didn't do a show on Thursday. We had a fantastic, panel discussion for the Republican debate that happened that night. And matter of fact, it turned out it's one of our, other than the shows where we've had been bumped up by guests, social media accounts and all sorts of stuff. It was one of our most watched shows, which actually kind of surprised me because I know the other three debates weren't anything to write home about. And I suppose as a debate goes, this one wasn't either. But we had a fun. We had a good conversation. That was Jeff Meyer and Tim Conaway. At any rate, because we started an hour early, the podcast on Spreaker, the audio-only podcast, was not recorded. Also not broadcast live either. Either one. So I'm going to try to get strip the audio out of the video and post that in the next couple of days. Not a lot of people are looking at that. So, but still, you know, we try to do what we try to do. So we got that. We're not going to do a show tomorrow. I got business for this program that precludes me preparing for it. So that's that. We'll be back on Wednesday. We'll have a show on Wednesday and Thursday. We don't have any guests lined up for Wednesday or Thursday. I'm hoping that I will arrange for that. Next Tuesday, Mark Morano from ClimateDepot.com is going to be on here. Now, he's a big-time guest. He's on CNN and Fox News regularly. And he's a climate denier, which is the reason I saw him on Fox News about a month ago. And I said, we got to get this guy on because we had talked to him. So I wrote him a nice letter, and I told him, yeah, I'm a climate denier too. And we've had a bunch of scientists on this show already. And, yeah, his publicist came back and said, yeah, we'll do that. So he's going to be on Tuesday, the 19th. On Wednesday, the 20th, we got a double bill. We're going to have Jeff Meyer from Kong News and Jennifer Oliver O'Connell from Red State on simultaneously. Now, we used to do this on a former radio show. They would come on together, and they're going to do this about once a month. So that'll be fun, too. So we'll do that. And we're taking off. God, I'm really discombobulated. Holy shit. Yeah. Okay, we're taking the week of Christmas off from the 25th to the 31st. Normally, we'd be on from the 25th to the 28th, Monday through Thursday. So we're taking that week off. But here's very important but. We are doing a show on New Year's Day night, of course. On January 1st, we're doing a show. We are going to do a show. And we have a special announcement we're going to make then, and also a special guest that we're going to have on regarding that announcement, setting something up for the coming year. So, yeah, so that's on January 1st, Monday. We are going to do a show. Just want to let you know. as I was reading about Dan Bongino, said he was talking about the trades. He said the coolest thing about radio broadcasting, and this isn't radio, but still it applies, is that is you get to announce announcements. You get to announce that, in fact, you're going to make an announcement. And that's what I just did. Yeah. All right, so you can call in tonight because we have no guests tonight. Right down here, it's jimandnight.com/call, right here. You want to send me a text and voicemail, 408-458-5088. You see this QR code right in the corner there? All right, so now if you shine your phone on that, you will go directly to our virtual green room preview screen. It used to be that that would link to our website that would link to the preview screen. I got rid of the second step. So, yeah, it goes right to it. So it's super simple. It's easier to call this program with your camera and your smartphone than it is to make a FaceTime call. It really is. So call in if you want. And I don't know if you read the description of the show tonight. We got more UFO news tonight. We did last Monday, we did that too. And the reason is because I'm getting tired of the news. We had a slow news day today. I'm going to touch on a couple of things that that did happen. They have indicted Hunter Biden on tax evasion charges, which is going to go down exactly like it did for Al Capone 80 years ago. So I don't know if you know the story on that. You know, Capone, he said, if you asked him, his profession was undertaker. But he wasn't an undertaker. He ran the giant organized crime family in Chicago and made millions and millions of dollars. But what he didn't do was pay any taxes. And they couldn't find enough people to squeal on him for all the people they killed and all the robberies they made. They couldn't. But taxes? Oh, yeah. How much money did you spend and where did you get it? And, all right, even if you got it legally, how come you didn't pay any taxes? And he went to jail for, I think it was 14 or 15 years. This is off the top of my head. I didn't check this. I think he died in prison, if I'm right. And he went to, I think he went to Alcatraz, of course, you know. It was not fun. So my accountant, you know, so anyway, Hunter Biden and the Democrats are now saying, well, you know, it's not that he didn't pay his taxes. It's just that he's late. Oh, bullshit. Bullshit. I mean, he's 7-8 years late? No, he didn't pay his taxes. He didn't. And the list of stuff they have, what he spent money on, is mind-boggling. I mean, not only did he spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on quote-unquote escort services, he tried to claim them as a business expense because apparently he needs some release for like relaxation or something. I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, this guy has spent, Fox News actually published a list of the amount of money he spent on various items. It's mind-boggling. I mean, this guy is just a despicable creep. He just is, you know, and I think it says something about Joe Biden that he's such a bad father. His son's a fucking mess. His daughter is confused as hell. You know, it's like this is not good. And they're trying to say, and you know, Hunter of course said, you know, they're trying to take my dad down through me. Maybe that's true, maybe it isn't. But here's the deal: you haven't paid your taxes. You know, now my accountant and people take this lightly all the time. I'm not pulling this figure out of my butt. 97% of all the tax cases brought before courts in the United States are decided for the IRS. 97%. Hardly anyone beats this rap. They don't, because frankly, it's pretty easy to prove. You know, I mean, if you're, it doesn't matter how you took the money in, if no matter how you hid it, when you spend it, that's pretty easy to document, you know? And this is exactly what they got going on here. So my personal accountant says she has had clients go to prison for tax evasion. Now, the terrible thing is, and I don't know if I have this correct, so, you know, if I'm wrong about this, forgive me. But there's a lot of people getting, a lot of accountants getting out of the tax business because I think as of last year, the year before, now when you sign the form saying you prepared the form for another person, you are legally responsible for what's on the form. That wasn't true before. All it was is just a declaration of the fact that you did it. So now if your client lies to you and you put out and you prepare the forms based on those lies, you're also responsible, even though there's no way in hell, in many instances, you as an accountant would know. And so a lot of people just, they won't put up with this. They're getting out of the business. You know, my accountant tells me that she thinks the federal government is trying to put small-time accountant operators out of business, that that's actually their goal. They only want to deal with major corporations, which, of course, seems to be the case with almost everything, actually, any business. It seems like they're only really interested in dealing with major corporations. I don't know if they can control them or what, you know. I wanted to give you one more story here about, and this is totally local. If you've been to Northeast Minneapolis at all, you might know there's a bar in Northeast, and I think it's at 15th Street and Washington, I think, called Mazelax. I don't even ever heard of this, but Mazelax is very famous, in, not only in Northeast Minneapolis, in the whole city, because in the 1970s, people would drive. Now, Northeast Minneapolis is across the river, the Mississippi River, from downtown. People would drive across the river for lunch, and they would line up literally around the block to get the Mazelax garlic roast beef sandwich. It was enormous. It was like the size of your head. And there's enough garlic in any sandwich to kill a horse. I mean, you basically couldn't go back to work after eating this because you would stink so bad. Oh, but people loved it. Because, you know, if you cook and I cook, you know, you basically, you can't put in too much garlic. And that's what Stan Mazelak thought too. So apparently that's what they did. But Stan decided he was going to cheat on his taxes. Now that we know that because Stan went to prison for this. And how did they catch Stan? They caught Stan, excuse me. They caught Stan because they decided to take the number of sandwiches he said he was selling per day, you know, or whatever, per week, the aggregate number, and compare it to the number of buns he ordered. And they came to the realization that he ordered way more buns than sandwiches produced, and they couldn't account for the buns. So it was pretty obvious that Stan was lying, and that was enough for a judge. Stan went to prison. He did. I don't know if he died in prison. He is deceased now. Mazelax is still running. They still make that giant roast beef garlic sandwich. It's not quite the phenomenon it was, and old timers will tell you it doesn't taste the same anymore. But so the bar, the people do not line up anymore. I mean, that was the heyday of this. But that, yeah, Stan Mazelax went to prison because of the bun count. So you're going to tell me, and you know, here's the deal. If there's any justice here at all, you know, I mean, Hunter Biden should go to jail. He should. This reason I brought all these stories up is that people have gone to jail for tax evasion for way less than what this guy did. I mean, he owes millions of dollars in taxes based on the amount of money he spent. Now, I've said this too, that they already, if Joe Biden was just another crime family, Don, you know, the whole family would have gone to prison a long time ago. They already, under normal RICO laws, they already have way more than enough evidence to prosecute all of these people to actually convict them. They do. But he's the president, so, you know, he's going to get a little bit of a slide. I don't know. You know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. They're not going to be able to impeach him. I mean, this thing about starting the formal inquiry is just so they can even issue more subpoenas. That's it. That's the only reason they're going to. I know there's people, there Republicans, that want to try to actually press an impeachment. You know, all right, you call me and tell me if you think that's worth the trouble. I mean, they won't succeed. That's all there is to it. It's going to be exactly like Donald Trump getting impeached. No Republican is going to vote for it. And here, no Democrats going to vote for it. And, you know, so what is the point? You know, they were just trying to embarrass Trump. I'd like to think that the Republicans are smarter than that. Probably not. They probably aren't. And so what I said in the description of the show tonight is that, is, you know, that maybe you're as sick as I am of hearing about all the college presidents who are trying to justify killing Jews. You know, I guess this is, the story's old. You know, you know, it's we're on at 11 o'clock at night. I assume you've heard all this stuff already. The one thing I would like to comment on all this, though, is the Saturday Night Live skit they ran, which, you know, first of all, they did not bother to make fun of the college professor. They made fun of Elise Stefanik. And what most people got lost in that thing is she's actually a graduate of Harvard. So I mean, she she's talking to the president of Harvard, and she went to Harvard. But the real crime here is that it wasn't funny at all. Now, supposedly, it's come out now. I don't know if you know this, that the way they do Saturday Night Live, the way they produce it, is that before they run the live show at 11:30 Eastern, they do a dress rehearsal in front of they do the whole show in front of, without putting on the air, in front of a separate live audience. In other words, it's not the same audience that sees it at 11:30. So they do the whole thing all the way through. They make adjustments. Sometimes they cut sketches. Sometimes they add sketches, all sorts of crap like that. They make adjustments, and then they do the real show. So supposedly Cecily Strong was in the sketch the first time through in the dress rehearsal, and immediately afterwards, she asked Lorne Michaels if she could opt out. She did not do it. Now, no one knows why. You know, it's like, we could assume, you know, the assumption is, oh, you know, she thought it was, you know, terrible or something, or not funny, because it was not funny. And that's the real amazing thing. So they've already done it in front of an audience. The audience didn't react to the skit basically at all. They're a little tittering, nothing major. And Lorne Michaels should know. He usually removes shit like that. Well, I shouldn't say that. I mean, they had quite a few years where the show was pretty lame. I think it's lame. I don't watch it anymore. I think it's seen its better days. I actually think they should probably get rid of it now. But it's been on TV for like 40-some years. This is how old I am. I saw the very first broadcast live. And I was not that young. I think I was 19 or 20 years old. But yeah, so anyway, I do want to comment on that. That was the big thing there. This sketch went on, but it was distinctly not funny. And they put it on anyway. And that's not, you know, usually he cuts shit like that. And that's the reason they do that dress rehearsal. So I don't want, you know, you can hear about that any place. I mean, you turn on Fox News, they talk about it all day long, you know. That's fine, you know. That's okay. I'm just assuming you're tired of it. I'm tired of it. So I'm going to talk about more UFO stuff today. And last Monday, we did a show like this too. But I have some updates based on what we were talking about then. And you might find this amazing. Since that time, a bipartisan group of House lawmakers have claimed that the intelligence community is concealing information about unidentified aerial phenomena, or UAPs, or UFOs, however you want to call it, and is scuttling their attempts to release information to the public. So you have a bipartisan group of people in both the House and the Senate who say they're being thwarted by the intelligence communities, basically stonewalling them, that they can't. And of course, you know, this has been the rumored thing in the UFO community for 40 years, is that these people will not part with any information. And now they're doing it to Congress. And this could possibly not end well, you know. So if you're going to go into the assumption that a lot of these UFO programs are black budget things, you know, where there's no accounting for them anywhere, and how do you do a black budget project? Well, you slip it under the budget of another overriding project. In other words, it becomes a sub-project of another project that has nothing to do with it. And that's how you siphon the money to these things. And the accounting in the federal government is not good enough right now to account for that sort of stuff. But, if Congress gets pissed off enough, they might change the rules, you know. Now, I've told you what I think. There seems to be a big struggle going on in the Pentagon between people who want to release the information and people who don't. Now, why would you not want to release the information? First of all, you have secrets your enemies on Earth don't have. There's that. Secondly, you think that rightly or wrongly, and I actually don't know the answer to this question, you think that the public will not be able to handle it. Now, you know, we talk to Jazz Shaw regularly from hotair.com, and he does the UFO beat for the Salem Media Group. And he disagrees with that. He thinks the public can handle it. I literally don't know. I used to think they couldn't. I mean, things have changed now. This has become much more open and in the open air. So maybe people are getting used to this at this point. And then also it depends on what percentage of the public you're talking about that can handle it. But I don't know. I honestly don't know the answer to that question. I can't speculate. I just can't. I just do not know. If they came out, if the president stood at a podium and said, we have proof that extraterrestrials have been flying here, I have no idea how the public would react at this point. I don't. I mean, it's, you know, it's the fact that we aren't alone. It's the single biggest news story in the history of mankind. It is. You know, but I do not know how people would react. Now, in 1938, when Orson Welles did the War of the Worlds broadcast, the reaction was actually, in retrospect, historically, it was exaggerated. There were problems on the East Coast, but the whole country didn't go nuts. They didn't. Once you got past the East Coast of the U.S., it was basically, you know, there were people and there were isolated incidences. But like in New Jersey, where in the story War of the Worlds and in that broadcast, it was happening in New Jersey. New Jersey went crazy because people thought it was real. And the weird thing is, there was a disclaimer at every commercial break that this is not a real story, that it's not a real broadcast, not a real newscast. There was, and still people went nuts. But of course, that was almost 100 years ago. So, you know, I just don't know. I don't. It's like, so also, I told you last week, too, about the Daily Mail, which is the British newspaper. And for some reason, not only do they seem to break stuff about American UFO stories, they break American news in general. I do not know why they're so plugged in to stuff on this side of the pond. I don't. But they break a lot of American news, politics, that sort of thing. I told you that they had that three whistleblowers had came forward and told the Daily Mail that, well, first of all, the Daily Mail said they've discovered the branch of the CIA that handles the extraterrestrial crash spacecraft. It's called the Office of Global Access, or the OGA. So that's what they've determined. They say the OGA has at least 9 spacecraft that aren't human, that aren't made by humans. 2 of them at least are completely intact. And also the fact, and this, but the reason I'm bringing this up now is I told you that last week. Well, the part I didn't tell you, mostly because I forgot, so I thought I would add this today, and that is, supposedly, these whistleblowers said that the CIA had a way of, they have come up with a technique to spot these flying extraterrestrial, flying saucers, even when they're cloaked. Now, cloaking is something out of Star Trek, you know, and that means that, you can't see it. And generally, it's also meant to say you can't see it with the naked eye either. Usually, in this particular instance, I think they're talking about radar, but you can't see it with the naked eye. Now, the weird thing is, I just find that I don't understand how this happens. In the Star Trek universe, and this was true of both the Romulans and the humans, it didn't matter, friend or foe, that if you have a spacecraft and it was cloaked, you had to uncloak to fire a weapon. That's the way it worked in the Star Trek universe. And amazingly, I don't understand what the hell, but supposedly that's also true in the real world too, that there's been people who have said, that have examined these spacecraft that said that they can fly cloaked. It's not so much whether they're going to fire a weapon, but if they want to do something unusual, like slow down or anything, that sort of thing, that they have to uncloak. I told you that a lot of people who are seeing UFOs right now are, believe it or not, local news crews from local TV stations across America, because they go out and they, you know, they're at some fucking bar dance or something, you know, and so they bring their cameras, you know, or some, you know, state fair or something, you know, and they will leave their cameras out and just like, you know, leave them on while they're setting up a shot or whatever. And nobody notices till they get back to the studio, they start to edit the footage, that they see a UFO pass right through the picture. And this happens a lot, you know? So now that's not cloaking, really. It's just that these damn things are moving so fast, you don't actually see them. I have my personal theory is that I know this is just really weird, but based on what I know, I think these things are all over the fucking place, that they're flying around constantly. And now I just got done reading a book by Nick Pope. He's the guy, you've maybe seen him on the TV shows like Ancient Aliens and stuff. He's the guy who used to work for the UFO desk of the Ministry of Defense in Britain. And he was there, I think, from what, like 92 to 2001. He's basically made a career out of this now about talking about UFOs. He's booked on every show. He's very well spoken. He wrote a book called The Uninvited. I just got done reading it, and it surprised me. The book's in two parts. The first part is basically the history of the UFO phenomenon from the 1940s or the 1930s, really, through the present day. The second part of the book, which is half of it, is on alien abduction, and that surprised me because, well, what really surprised me is that Nick Pope believes it's real. He thinks the aliens really are abducting people. And he's a very rational guy, but he came to the same conclusion I've come to, and that is too many people have talked about this, and also most of these stories corroborate each other. In other words, the pattern is very similar, and even for people who have a casual knowledge of UFOs and alien abduction, there's things that people report that aren't publicly known, you know? And some researchers, and he even said the same things with him, they don't talk about some of this stuff, if only because they use some of these markers to confirm whether the story that someone's telling is quote-unquote true. But he said people come up to him in airports, coffee shops, and pour their hearts out and tell him stories, these wild, wild stories that he said they have not been able to, they've never told anyone. And, of course, some of this stuff's either a hoax, fake, or some of these people are crazy, of course, you know. But like he said, he can't buy that all of them are. And we're talking about like thousands and thousands of people. Supposedly a poll done, and it was not, they didn't directly ask, but they couched the questions. I think it was Roper did a poll that came to the conclusion that 2% of the American public has been abducted by extraterrestrials. That's a shitload of people. A shitload of people. You know, I mean, hell, you know, we're talking about the transgender community here, you know. The New York Times has estimated that 0.5% of the American public is transgender, one out of every 200 people. I think that might be high. But also, this is really interesting. I'm getting off on a tangent here. I think it was the European Psychiatric Association just came up. I think that's what it's called. It's the major, it's the European equivalent of the American Psychiatric Association. They came out with a study just last week that said that transgenderism is a mental illness, that it's not real. You know, now they used to say that about homosexuality, but the major worldwide psychiatric organizations have changed their mind on that. But they said that they came to the conclusion that transgenderism is not real, that it's a mental illness. Now, I've told you, I have an acquaintance who transitioned very successfully. But that said, and this bears repeating, and that is people who have transgender, transsexual surgery, gender reassignment surgery, their afterwards, their rates of suicide are much, much higher, way higher than the standard background for the population. Way higher. So, you know, what I've said on this program before, is the thing is, I think this is like my problem with most liberal myths is that there's seems to always be a kernel of truth in every one of them. And here it's that transgenderism is real, but it's very, very rare. The vast majority of people who think they're transgender are just nuts. And the things you can't tell, you know. Now, the things we know, homosexuality is real because people know who they want to have sex with. It's not too hard, you know. It's like, have you ever seen gay porn? You know, it's like, if you like that, well, you know, I think that maybe you might be gay. It's not, you know, testosterone's a wonderful thing. I mean, it gets right to the point. Who do you want to have sex with, you know? And I've always thought, especially talking to my gay friends, I've come to the conclusion that it's genetic. They haven't figured that out, how it works, but I think it is. But the transgender thing, I don't know. You know, so now I got off on a complete utter tangent here about the fact because the comparison was that 2% of the American population supposedly has been abducted by aliens. You know, well, 2% is a large amount of people. But that said, if you're in Zeta Reticuli, you're 37 light years away, and your technology is 1,000 or 2,000 or 5,000 years ahead of us, and you're flying all over the galaxy, and you live for like 2,000 years, everybody does. You've got a shitload of people. You have all of your material needs taken care of. At that point, technology takes care of everything. What are you going to do with your time? Well, let's go to Earth and let's tag a bunch of people. But a friend of mine, he's got a point though. He really does. He said, you know, here's my thing with the alien abduction thing. You know, he knows I do this, you know. He said, how many butts do you have to probe? After 5 million of them, aren't you good? And he's got a point. He does. How many times do you have to do it? You know? Now, suppose, you know, people who have been abducted say that they either figure this out or they're told overtly that their name of the game is they're looking for DNA for reproduction. That's supposedly. So, so if that's the case, then you do need to probe every single butt of the 5 million people because you're going to get different DNA out of everyone. But still, my friend has a point. And he was using this. He said, here's the reason I think you're wrong. And I can't argue with that. You know, do you ever see and it's been lost to history, not the episode, but the fact that it was the pilot for South Park was the episode Cartman Gets an Anal Probe, where Cartman gets abducted by aliens. That was the pilot. That was the very first show they ever did. And it's fucking funny, hilarious. Anyway, yeah, go watch that. So the deal is, I brought this whole thing up, even though I talked about it last week, because the CIA, these whistleblowers say the CIA has something in place where they can identify or track cloaked extraterrestrial spacecraft. I have no fucking idea how they do this. I don't know how they cloak the damn things. I don't have a clue. So, and I don't know if this is real. I don't, you know, but the Daily Mail has been very, very both accurate and reliable when it comes to this stuff. So I'm throwing that out there. That's all I'm doing here. I'm throwing out. It's better than talking about the college professors. That's all I know. So anyway, I found Nick Pope's book really interesting, partly because I did not think he believed that sort of stuff. He seems like a pretty rational person. Now, I also want to point out here that he has brought up the fact, I mean, I got a quote here from him, and he says, we only need one crashed UFO and one extraterrestrial body to fundamentally change everything in terms of our understanding of the universe. Absolutely right. And I've always said this, you know, if you can definitively prove one spacecraft that touches down or the fact that an alien exists, if you can definitively prove it, you only need one example. You only need one example proves the whole rest of the phenomena, even if people are lying about half of it. So he's got a point. But he does also point out, he said that he worked for the Ministry of Defense in the UK, and the UK never had that sort of smoking gun. He said he looked for it, never found it. He said that as far as he knows, the UK does not have any crashed spacecraft and does not have any dead alien bodies. Now, there's a possibility he wouldn't know, you know. So, I mean, that's what we have going on here. Sean Kirkpatrick just quit from Arrow, the All Domain Anonymous reclamation office, whatever it's called. He just quit. And he finally, in his exit, he said that he's hoping that the aliens are real, because if they aren't, that means this technology is from one of our adversaries, and that's even scarier. And he's right. Marco Rubio said the same thing. You know, he said, I actually hope it's aliens, because if it turns out this stuff, if one of our adversaries, this stuff's actually from Earth, we're screwed. And he's totally right about that. So, anyway, yeah, I just thought that was really interesting. I've told you in the past, you know, the thing, we've got a lot of our information about the UFOs have come from Canada, because the Canadian Air Force and the Canadian military interfaces with the American military, but they are not bound by any of our security oaths. So we get a lot of information from about UFOs that's happened in America from the Canadians. And I've told you that Paul Hellyer, right, thank you, Jim. Jim can talk. He said that he knew for a fact the extraterrestrial spacecraft were real, and he would know. He was the Ministry of Defense for Canada. Yeah, he would know, you know, and he said he knew because of his talks with the Americans. But he is not bound by any American security oath. Where here, you can go to prison for life if you bust your security oath, which is the reason a lot of these people don't want to talk. And also, I gave you before I told you why this big struggle going on in the Pentagon, one of the reasons, supposedly, and I shouldn't say supposedly, because this presupposes that this phenomenon is real, but still, it makes sense. So in some ways, it's kind of like implicit proof about the fact that to keep the secret, people have invariably busted the law, and no one wants to go to jail. Now, the thing that the Congress is trying to set up, matter of fact, they actually have already set it up, but apparently not a lot of people trust us yet. They've told the military that if anyone comes forward on this, they will automatically be immune from prosecution. So that's something that they're hoping. David Grush, he testified under that preconception about the fact that he would not be prosecuted for anything he possibly did illegally in this regard if he told Congress everything he knows. And there's other people supposedly come forward too, but not enough, because there people still don't believe this. Because supposedly, if you bust enough laws here, I mean, you could go to jail for a long, long time. And there's some people who say, no, just keep it like a DA friend of mine said just recently, deny. You know, that's what you want to do. So, any rate, yeah, I found Nick Pope's book very interesting. It's called The Uninvited, if you want to read it. He gives some examples in there of people he's talked to whose abduction stories he found to be particularly credible. Excuse me. He just didn't strike me as the kind of guy who actually would buy into that. He just didn't. I thought he was kind of by the book and sort of thing. But he says he thinks that the most logical explanation is the literal one, and that is these people are telling the truth, that this stuff actually happened. And as I do too, by and large. Yeah, there's a lot of people that are spoofing, and there's a lot of people who are nuts. They are. But still, not every single person, especially when you're talking about maybe tens of thousands or even hundreds of thousands of people. Another thing that happened in the UK is that supposedly now, and this was, I can't remember, was this The Sun that reported this, that police in the United Kingdom are swamped now for the last couple of years with UFO reports. Wait, they've given up trying to process them. Apparently, in the country, they're getting an average of these are people called the police. This is not like MUFON or any of this sort of shit. They're getting two reports a day. They've gotten 1,805 reports in the last 3 years. They can't keep up. They've basically given up processing this stuff because they can't do it. They can't put that many investigators on it. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And then the other thing I wanted to bring up that I brought up last Monday too is I was telling you about what this called the Welsh Roswell, 1983, guy, a Welsh farmer named Invel Evans. I didn't have his name last week. He saw, and apparently a whole bunch of other people saw it too, a flying saucer hit a bunch of trees on his farm and fly away. And so then he went over to the grove where the trees were, and they found on the ground, they found a bunch of metal, and they had the metal tested. Now, what I told you last week is that I didn't know why, even this happened in 1983, I didn't know why this was in the news. It was in the news because it's the 40th anniversary of this. That's why, this last week, or 2 weeks ago, it was the 40th anniversary of this incident. And they tested the metal, and it was made up of aluminum foam, not aluminum foil, aluminum foam, and an element called lanthanum, right? Did I get that right? Oh, I didn't actually get copy of that, but yeah. And so lanthanum is extremely rare on Earth. You couldn't find enough to build a spacecraft. And aluminum foam didn't exist in 1983. It does now, but it didn't then. That was not made on Earth at that time. So that's kind of interesting. Anyway, that is the reason we talked about that last week is because the reason I'm talking about it now is I didn't know why that was in the news for something that was 40 years old. It was the 40th anniversary. I got some real science news here, and this is really exciting. If you're a geek like me, you understand what's going on here, and that is physicists at Princeton University have reported the successful on-demand quantum entanglement of individual molecules. Now, up to this point, we knew what quantum entanglement was, but we couldn't actually create it. Supposedly, they have busted this. And this is really, really important. Okay, so what quantum entanglement is, all right, you have a molecule, right? Let's say you have two molecules, right? They're identical, right? They're from the same piece of same material. And you spin, let's say the electrons are going clockwise, and then you spin them so now the electrons are going counterclockwise. Now, you separate these two molecules from the same particle, it doesn't matter. You can put them at the ends of the universe, but they communicate with each other instantaneously. The quantum entanglement, in other words, trumps the speed of light. It doesn't matter. You can put one 1 billion light years away, and when you spin one, the other one will spin at the same time. And I mean at the same time, instantaneously. They will spin together. Now you're thinking, okay, why is that cool? Well, here's a reason it's cool. Right now, we use radio waves to communicate with spacecraft, right? So the trip to the moon, I think the delay is like, what, maybe about, what, 10, 15 seconds or something like that? If you're going to go to Saturn, the delay is going to be like a couple hours because that's how long... Because radio waves are light waves, essentially, and that's how long it takes to speed about the speed of light to get out that far. So, and the thing is, if for some reason we could actually fly faster than the speed of light and we're flying around the galaxy, well, under normal circumstances, you couldn't use radio waves to communicate because it would take hundreds of years in some instances to, like, for example, I just use the example of Zeta Reticuli, because there's a lot of these people who get abducted who they say they're told by the aliens that they're from Zeta Reticuli. Zeta Reticuli is a double star system 37 light years from Earth. That means if we wanted to send a radio signal there, it would take 37 years for that radio signal to get there. Well, you can't communicate on that. But if you can master quantum entanglement, you know, so it's like, I don't know if you know how telephones used to work. You had a carbon-based microphone, and the movement of the carbon actually created the electrical signal that got transferred. You could do the same thing with quantum entanglement, where the movement of the electrons in the particles based on your voice, for example, that would be indirect, but still, for example, and then that got sent to the other pair of the quantum molecule, and then you could communicate instantaneously. That's that. If you watch Star Trek, that's what they call the subspace transmission. That's how that works. Now, the problem up to this point is that we haven't been able to control the quantum reaction. We have not been able to control it. Now, the guys at Princeton, and actually, I read the whole article, and I did not copy this. Guys at Princeton and another college actually came up with this. Not only simultaneously, they actually published their papers in the journal Science in the same issue. So basically, they both independently figured this out. But the people at Princeton now have figured out how to do this, and this is gonna be a huge game changer. I mean, this is gonna be it's not just for communications, for all sorts of shit, quantum computing. It's like, I mean, we're on the doorstep of a huge change, a step up in computing power and how it works. Because up to now, it's been ones and zeros. That's it. Now, the other thing in terms of computing that the quantum entanglement can do is it can put atoms in two separate states at the same time. So, for example, right now, your computer runs off zeros and ones. So everything that gets plowed through there, and that's how transistors work. Transistors work either zeros or ones. Well, imagine a transistor that would work with zeros, ones, and twos. You've just doubled the power of your computer. You know. So what about a transistor that could put the change the state to 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6, you know? You've just blown the whole, and that's one of the things you can do with entanglement. You just blew the whole thing wide open. It's really, really amazing. It really is. I mean, because I'm a geek and I'm a dork, I'm really excited about this because I've been waiting for this. I mean, the quantum entanglement communication device was a theory that was only a theory. Now it will become fact. No, someone will eventually build this. I'm sure it's way more complicated than even I've described it, and also just the fact that they can control the entanglement, you know. But still, this is the start. So, you know, what, 20 years? You know, I don't know how long. So, and this is, you probably heard this term. Albert Einstein described quantum entanglement of spooky action at a distance, which is pretty damn cool, you know, because yeah, it's spooky. It makes no sense, but that's the whole thing. If you study quantum mechanics, it basically defies rationality. That's the thing. I mean, there's stuff going on that doesn't make any sense in our real world, and that's one of them. Okay, you can't go past faster than the speed of light, but this thing does. How does it do that? And the thing is, I mean, it's an inanimate object too. You're talking about a bunch of molecules. There's no thinking going on here, or the fact that this is the real amazing thing. And I had explained this to a friend of mine, and he's not stupid about the fact that if you do quantum experiments, that the result of the experiment can change whether you're watching the experiment or not. By observing it. Now, my friend said, well, no, you're just talking about the measurement. No, literally watching it. Literally watching the experiment will change the results. And not only that, consistently, you can measure the experiment observed and not observed. That's crazy. Well, why should it matter? But it does, you know? There's a Norwegian university, if I'm right, who's done the experiments at this. They have tried to prove essentially the collective unconscious of humanity, or I'm sorry, the collective conscious. And so what they've done is they've taken random number generators. Now, random number generators, it's a computer box, and the things they generate a string of random numbers. Now, this is kind of hard to explain, but you can make an argument that no string of numbers is truly random. But it depends on how far out you can you take it until the pattern repeats, right? You know, if you got five quintillion decimal places, well, you know, after five quintillion decimal places, the pattern starts over again. So, and I don't know how they measure this and how they can prove this, but good, real random number generators they can create a string of numbers that truly does not repeat at all. It goes into infinity. So they can do that. But what they've noticed is that if you put one of these generators like in a rack in a room, you know, I'm talking about literally just in your room, you know, and you stand next to it and you start to think of strings of numbers, that it will fuck the machine up. And you don't have to touch it. You're not touching it. Just by thinking about it, you will fuck the machine up. And the other thing they noticed, and this is the real amazing part, this is the part where the actual experiment comes in, where there's catastrophic events that happen at certain locations where these machines exist, like local, I'm talking about local, that the machines start to fuck up like a few days ahead of time. In other words, the machines seem to know when something terrible is going to happen. And they've noticed this all over the world. It's been very, very consistent. And that the machine starts not generating random numbers. It's like the psyche of humans actually affects the machines in that area, even though nothing's happened yet. You know, and this is there's a lot of people who say that humans, that we have some sort of precognition of events of that happen, and it's particularly traumatic events or really, or in other words, we maybe have clairvoyance, but it's not very good, and you need a bunch of people together to do it or something like that. It's like, but yeah, so they've been using this Norwegian university. They've been running this experiment for years, and they've got the same result over and over again. It's just crazy. One other piece of news here too. The largest fusion reactor ever built just started operating in Japan on December 1st. So this is not a commercial reactor yet. You know, they just finally in the last year they've finally come up with a fusion reaction that actually generated more energy than it took to start. So now fusion is a nuclear power that's basically the opposite of fission, which is what we have now. So I mean, there's two big nuclear power plants on either side of the city of the Minneapolis here. And so they work by splitting atoms. So you got a bunch of atoms, in this case uranium, right? Because their uranium isotope is particularly easy to split. So, and shine or point an electron gun at it, and you split the atoms, and by splitting the atoms, you create energy. This is how the atomic bomb works, the ones we dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. That's how they work. They created a shitload of energy, because when the bomb goes off, it sends a bunch of stuff into the uranium that splits the atoms, right? Okay, you got a big, huge fucking explosion. The only thing is, in a nuclear power plant, it's contained. It's controlled. That's the difference. Now, I do have to bring something up here, too. People think nuclear power is really, really dangerous. If you listen to our interview with Patrick Moore, you'll know that isn't true. The only real problem we've ever had with nuclear power on Earth is Chernobyl. And that was even, and I didn't know this, I read about it after Patrick Moore talked about it. That was a really, really weird set of circumstances, too, which normally doesn't happen at all. So, but that was a true meltdown. I mean, literally the core melted into the earth. And you still can't live around there. It's still, the radiation is still huge. And a bunch of people died from radiation poisoning, and it was terrible. That was it. Three Mile Island was nothing. Nothing compared to that. Nothing. You know, we know how to design nuclear power plants now, so it's literally impossible for them to melt down. It's physically impossible. It can't happen. we have basically solved all the problems with nuclear power. And this is the reason Patrick Moore, I mean, I asked him, you know, I got a lot of kudos for this. The interview with him, I asked him, well, why did you quit Greenpeace? Do you have any regrets? And he said, yeah, I have a bigger regret. We should have embraced nuclear power. And finally now, finally, these goddamn greenies, like AOC, she has finally said, maybe we should think about nuclear power to for climate change. Of course, there is no climate change, but still, you know, when there's pollution, you know, and this is one other thing, you know, I'm talking about, you know, a kernel of truth and everything. There's no climate change, folks. Well, actually, there is. The kernel of truth in that is the temperature of the Earth is rising, not because of CO2, not because of anything we're putting in the atmosphere. It's just happening. It's an effect that has to do with the rotation of the Earth around the sun. That's what it is. If you think you can control that, well, I got a bridge in Brooklyn I want to sell you, you know. But that said, yeah, coal's dirty. And this thing about clean coal here, that's pretty much bullshit. That's not really real. You know, I mean, coal is a very dirty thing. Do you want pollution in your atmosphere? No, I don't. You know, nuclear power basically solves all that issue. Now, I'm going to get back to what I was talking about here, the difference between fission and fusion. So we have right now, all nuclear power on Earth is generated by fission. Fusion is the opposite. Fusion is where you take two molecules and you jam them together to make a new molecule. That's what that is. And that releases energy too. In some ways, it's both more powerful and also more efficient. The problem is really, really hard to do. Basically, fusion is what happens in the sun. So you are, in essence, creating a tiny little sun in your room. The problem is it's so hot, you can't touch anything. So you literally have to control this thing. You have to put it in a force field to keep it off the floor and to keep it from touching anything. There's that. Yeah, how do you do that? Well, they figured out how to do this. This been one step at a time, they figured out how to do this stuff. Then you have to start the reaction. Well, up to now, starting the reaction took more power than the reaction generated. But finally this year, they finally passed that threshold. I heard some scientists say it was the equivalent of going to the moon, of landing on the moon, the fact that they did this, because now they know they can do it. So now it's a race to see how they can commercialize this. The stuff I've heard is that they will be able to make commercial power out of this in 50 years. Now, the other thing is you can use almost, you know, in a regular fission reactor, they use uranium because uranium is really easy to split apart. When it comes to jamming things together, you can use anything. It doesn't matter. Matter of fact, you know, seawater is probably going to be the obvious one because we have shitloads of it, you know. So, that's the thing. It's like, this power will basically end up being free, so because in that sense, there's no real fuel. The fuel is free. It's anything you want to put in there. Now, it's not going to be free because it's going to take them $1 quadrillion to develop this. But still, at some point, it'll be pretty cool. So, I was talking about those aliens on Zeta Reticuli, and so, you know, about the fact they have so much time on their hands. But that's the thing. You give us another 30, 40, 50 years, we're going to have that. And then we're going to have atomic replicators. That'll probably be in the next 200 years. That's the exact same thing on Star Trek when Captain Picard orders this Earl Grey tea out of the machine. And that is, you'll have a device in your house, probably. Probably the size of like a washing machine or a large microwave oven, where you'll be able to make anything. And, you know, it's like kind of like a 3D printer now, except you're not actually like layering one type of, substance. You'd be able to literally make anything out of just a bunch of junk molecules. And that's going to happen too. We're probably 200 years away from that. But you stop and think about this. Once you can do that, you basically eliminated all material needs on the planet. You know, my guess is you'll have one in your house, and then there'll be a big one down at the city center or something like that, kind of almost like the trash, you know, the garbage division now, and you go down there, you know, you want a new car, you plug in what you want, you know, and, you know, it takes a few, you know, takes half an hour, and you get a new vehicle. And it doesn't cost anything. That's the thing, because you're like the fusion power, you're literally dealing with junk molecules. You can put anything in there. Doesn't matter. So, you know, this is the evolution of life on this planet. And if you're going to go into the assumption that other people on other planets are way ahead of us, Christ, you know, what are they doing? They're flying around. They literally don't have anything they have to do. All their material needs are taken care of. Yeah, and so let's send a bunch of people to Earth and let's abduct a bunch of people and do some scientific experiments. Why not? Why wouldn't you do it? You know, you got nothing else. Literally, you got nothing else to do. You're explorers now. You're permanent explorers. So I know this sounds crazy, but you stop and think about it. It's logical and rational. That's what's gonna happen. We do the same thing. We're out tagging animals. You know, I mean, supposedly a lot of these people say they've been abducted have implants. You know, and the implants have been found. And a guy named Roger Lear, he spent a lot of time. He was a surgeon. He took a lot of those things out of people. You know, they tiny, tiny little pieces of metal that look like nothing, except they realize, holy shit, they're broadcasting radio waves. Like, who the fuck would have thought that? You know. And finally, I'm gonna end with this because this is just goofy. Let me just read this. An international scientific study by the Society for Scientific Exploration. I asked, that's not what I was going to do. Researchers from the Max Planck Institute of Animal Behavior in Germany studied the calls by monk parakeets in 8 cities in Spain, Belgium, Italy, and Greece, and found out that the parrots, when they talk, have different accents. Okay. It depends on where they lived. And those parrots have baby parrots, those parrots, they end up passing on the same accents. It's like, they're just like people. They have accents. You're like, shit. Oh, God. Well, folks, I have to hold on. Yeah, no, I'm going to leave you with this. This is what I was going to, the thing about the Society for Scientific Exploration. Ask 15 pre-vetted mediums who claim to communicate with non-physical beings the same set of 10 questions to assess the consistency of their responses. They found the answers had little correspondence with each other. In other words, they did not match. But what they did find through qualitative analysis is that the answers had coherent and common themes, prompting the research to conclude that channeling may be a real complex phenomenon. Now, I'm gonna end with this. I'm going to recommend a book to you. It's called Surviving Death by Leslie Kean. Leslie Kean was one of the 3 authors of that original story in the New York Times in December 2017 that said the UFOs are real, or that the government knew the UFOs were real. She was one of the authors of those, and she's made her entire career off of reporting weird shit. She wrote a book called Surviving Death. So the book's in 2 parts, as was the book I read, Nick Pohl. The first part of the book deals with reincarnation. I've told you about there's a guy named Ian Stevenson. He's passed now, and his work was taken up by another guy at the University of Virginia named Jim B. Tucker, and you can buy his books on Amazon too. So what Stevenson and Tucker figured out, or Stevenson actually figured this out in the 1960s, and it, basically by accident, because he said some parent, he was the head of psychology department at the University of Virginia, and he said, well, there's something wrong with my kid. My kid keeps talking about being alive before. And so apparently, I'm condensing this for brevity. Stevenson talked to the kid, and the kid said, I used to be another person. And then Stevenson realized, well, he started to ask the kid more questions, like, who, what was your name, where did you live? And the kid knew all the information. And then Stevenson went and checked that information out, and it turned out to be true. Now, this was in the 1960s, well before the internet, when people didn't know shit. Now we're really, really stupid, but we know everything. And so he started, he basically devoted his life. He talked to like 700 kids. People started calling him and telling him about this once he wrote a paper about it. About 700 kids, and he said he, in every single instance, they checked out the info, and in 70% of the cases, the info turned out right. So he came he said there's either one of two things going on here. These kids have been reincarnated, which they say, that was their claim. They said they were, that they were consciously aware of the fact that they had been reincarnated. Or, he said, if they're wrong, or we're all wrong, there's some giant cosmic database where people's souls get stashed, and somehow these kids are accessing the wrong database table. They end up somehow erroneously accessing someone else's data. And either, as you know, both those guys have said, Stevenson and Tucker, and I say too, it doesn't matter which one it is. It's still fucking amazing. You know, that's the only explanation they could come up with for any of this stuff. So Leslie Keene wrote this book. The first part's about these kids. I think it's interviews, it's long chapters, interviews with half a dozen of these kids, who said, one kid said he died in World War II in a plane crash. One kid said he was an agent in Hollywood to a bunch of stars in the 1930s. That one was particularly fascinating because they took the kid to Hollywood. Now, unfortunately, the kid knew his address, but that house was plowed down a month before they got there. But he also knew where his office was, and that building is still standing. And the kid knew his way around the building. He said, there's a stairway at the end of this hall that goes up to the roof. I should go up there and smoke. He was right about everything. He was right about everything. He knew his way around this building he'd never been in before, supposedly. So the reason I'm bringing this up is because the book was in two parts. The first part was about in reincarnation, which was kind of verifiable and fascinating. The second part of the book was about mediums. And I've always thought this was so much bullshit, I almost didn't read it, the second part. I've never bought this medium shit ever. I just thought, this is just crap. But I did read it. I reluctantly sat down and read this. And Keene at least opened my eyes to the fact that maybe something's actually going on here. Because she said she has talked to these mediums who have come up with unbelievable, you know, accurate and specific information that they should have not been able to access. So, you know, I don't know. That's the reason I think you should read the book. You tell me if you buy it or not. Like I said, I've never bought the medium thing ever. But I can't say that reading this book changed my mind, but it certainly opened my mind to the possibility. The thing about the kids and the reincarnation thing is it's so well documented. It's basically it's hard to discount. I mean, Stevenson had his critics. People said the investigations were unscientific, all sorts of shit. Still, the body of the work and the fact that 70% of the kids knew what they were talking about is just fucking incredible. He basically proved that reincarnation is real, you know. So that's what I think. But the medium thing, you know, I don't know. So I would suggest you read that book if you're interested in life after death. That's, you know, and she doesn't really, well, she touches on it, but she doesn't really talk about near death experiences per se. The book's really about these kids and the reincarnation phenomena and mediums and the idea of communicating with people that are dead. So, yeah, you want to stay up at night and get wrapped up in something. This book sold a shitload of copies. It's been very popular. So, at any rate, yeah, I suggest you check it out. It's called Surviving Death by Leslie Keene, and her name is spelled K-E-A-N. And with that, folks, I'm going to leave you for tonight. So now, we're not going to do a show tomorrow night. I got work I got to do for this. We'll be back on Wednesday. Don't know if we're going to have a guest. Doesn't matter. Come back. Maybe I want to talk about the news then. So I've talked about this paranormal stuff two Mondays in a row. But seriously, I get tired of the news. I got to admit, I just do. You know, I don't know about you. And I'm consuming it to do this program. And every once in a while, we had a relatively slow news day today, other than the Hunter Biden thing, which is like, which, I mean, he's going to get busted. That's all there is to it. You know, I mean, if he doesn't see any significant time from this, you can basically kiss the justice system goodbye in the United States. Because people have done way serious time for way, way less. And yeah, and you know, they can talk about whatever, you know, that he legitimately got his money off. It's fine. He did not pay his taxes. He didn't. You know, it's the same thing they busted Al Capone on. You know, so anyway, I want to thank you for watching. I'm Jim Peters. Good night, Esperanza. Good night, Uncle Donnie. And good night to you, wherever you are. I'll see you on Wednesday. Take care.